Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is the 9th of December 2016, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As always, today I'm joined by Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. And I also have with me Messerschmitt, who has just put in the last finishing touches to his Leon de Grail documentary that we've all been looking forward to. So you've got three of us hosts here today. We've got lots of stuff to talk about. But first off, I'll just say, how are you doing today, Dennis? Are you feeling well? Have you been having a good time this week, I hear? Is that some sort of party that you went to or had?
Yeah, I've been. It used to be wine, women and song, but now it's just song and wine. probably lived about two or three days with no sleep. You know how it gets. Rock and roll, isn't it, really?
You've been celebrating the success of your documentaries this year.
Well, I've had a good year all round, both in that light side of my life and the personal side of life as well. Been really good.
Yeah. We don't want to go too much into personal things. We don't want to help to identify us. You know, we all like to use our anonymous names here and sure. Just talk to the... Keep things personal and public. Messerschmitt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. And to no small degree, probably, because I got some really nice comments about the video. Amazingly well comments. They seem to really like it, the few people that have seen it so far.
Well, it's excellent. As you say, there's a private preview version that's out at the moment. There's a few bits and pieces, more bits that I think you want to do to it just yet. But I'm really impressed with it. I mean, you've done a really good job of finding all these bits of film to put with it, and you've got sound effects going through it. And I do think the audio does help with these things. I spent a lot of time cleaning up the audio to make sure that it was really good. I think people are going to be really impressed with it when it finally comes out. We've got somebody else who's designing some images for it as well, so that it's got a proper intro to it. But I've only seen the first half hour of it, and I was really, really impressed. You know, really good. If I'd had the time, I would have stopped and watched the other hour and a half, because it really is something that you watch instead of just listening to. Because we've heard the Leon de Grail series that we did with you, but that was all broken up into little pieces. It was three or four parts, and actually hearing it all in one length is really good. I think people are really going to enjoy it when it comes out. Dennis, did you manage to watch some of it already?
Well, I saw a small piece just before I came on air. Obviously, I've only had about 4 hours sleep, and I didn't realise it was 2 hours long. But I'll be giving it me full attention a little later. Echo your words, really. You've done a great job. That's something I'd be proud of.
Well, it must be nice for you to sit back and watch somebody else's video. I know I do like to chill at the weekend and listen to Red Ice, listen to podcasts that I haven't produced myself that aren't anything to do with Radio Area. And it's nice to do that and listen to something that, it's sort of separate. So it must be nice for you to be able to know that you've got a video that you can sit there and watch that's good quality. Oh, yeah. That's, it's on obviously the same subject matter, because obviously Messerschmitt was inspired by your documentaries to come on here and talk about it. Because your idea at the beginning, Messerschmitt, you suggested these Axis war heroes and you were saying, can Dennis make a documentary about them? And we've ended up getting you to make your own documentary about them.
Yes, I had absolutely no intention of doing it myself. I thought I can't do that. And I knew that if Dennis would do it, it would be fantastic. And I'm really glad about all the praise I'm getting, but I would like to caution people. They should not expect something grand looking or really professional. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, you said that you think it's going to look professional, but in my opinion, it doesn't. And how could it? Because I have no training in this. This is my first video. And so I really don't want people to get their expectations up too high. I did the best I could without any training, trying to learn to operate the program. And well, it's the best I could do without it taking even longer.
Well, that's the thing. It always takes a long time, a lot longer to actually make these things than people think.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
just.
Yeah, well, you think, you know, you're, I mean, when Dennis was making a 15-minute chapter, I mean, how long would it take you to make a 15-minute chapter of a great story?
At least 3 weeks.
Three weeks. Yeah, if I'm doing a podcast, an hour-long podcast would take at least 3 hours after it with doing the audio and writing the article and uploading it. You know, that all takes, that's all part of it. And that could still be improved upon, you know, a hell of a lot. If you really wanted to make it perfect, you would remove absolutely every piece of background noise that you could possibly find. And to do that, you'd have to do it manually. You have to open it up and open the whole file up and look in between each word for that people say for any background noise and then manually remove it. So it's a lot of work, but then it comes, you know, that's what makes it. I know when you're making these videos, you know, you've got to look at each frame and make certain that each frame looks good for something that's you're only going to see for 10-15 seconds, but you could be spending a lot of time on it. And you know, you're saying that you were self-taught with it, Messerschmitt. I didn't know anything about producing podcasts when I started doing them. I just knew that we needed some podcasts that were pro-Christian. Basically, we had lots of podcasts that were anti-Christian and nationalist, but there really weren't very many that were pro-Christian that weren't actually specifically Christian podcasts. You know, we wanted to put something out there that you know, wasn't going to be knocking traditional Christianity, basically. And that was what inspired me to start up doing the radio and get Andre to do the radio with Radio Stormer and then to continue it with Radio Aaron. But I had, you know, no idea of how to do things. And I just thought, you know, all you're doing is you just record a conversation and that's it. Once it's recorded, it's done. You know, it's going to be a lot easier than just writing articles. It's going to be so quick. And of course, it's not. You know, just the recording it is the smallest amount of time that gets used. It's everything else that goes into it afterwards. Grandpa Lampshade talks about this a lot. The amount of time he puts into making podcasts, because he thought it was just going to be an easy job. There's a lot of work that goes into producing this for people, and it's not for money, is it? You know, we all do it out of love for our people and wanting to serve our people and do something that, you know, our people are going to appreciate, that's going to help them. And that's what inspires me. Schmidt, what are your plans for the next one then? Because I know that you're wanting to do this with all of them, aren't you?
Yes, eventually. I mean, if people really enjoy them and I get the feedback that they want to see more of this, I would have my sights on the Marseille presentations next, probably. And yes, I agree. I mean, I'm certainly not in it for any monetary gain or anything. I just want people to know the truth about these men, what they did and what they fought for, and so that we can have an example in them.
Well, they were great heroes. I mean, it's just it, Axis war heroes. We know nothing about them, really, being part of the Allied countries. We're just told that, you know, these were the big bad Nazis. And yet, as you found out, when you start going through Wikipedia looking for, you know, the greatest military people of the last century, most of them are German. These incredible feats that in the tanks and in the airplanes, and that Finnish guy that you did in the series, I forget what he was, but I think he was blind at one point, and yet he was still hitting all his targets. Quite amazing characters that you brought up in the series. I know it must be a challenge finding all the footage to go with it as well. Did you find some particularly rare footage for this Leon de Grel one? You mentioned something about a reenactment to me.
Yes, there's something I came across quite late in the process, and that was a French documentary. It had actually not occurred to me, or maybe it's Belgian, I just know it's French-speaking. And it hadn't occurred to me to enter French keywords before to find footage, and I did that, and then that one came up, and it featured some really well done reenactment footage of, I think it was Polish people, Polish reenactment enthusiasts, and they did a really good job at reenacting the balloons.
It must be good to see them all in the uniforms. I remember when I was in Latvia, you know, I saw a reenactment there. They had a reenactment of the SS group or the Legion group, and the Red Army came to get them, and they were in this bunker, and there was lots of bangs, and they had all the weapons there and proper explosives. And at the end of it, three of the guys were dead, and one of them was still alive. And just the reenactment itself really brought it home to exactly, you know, what was happening there. These were real people that this happened to. And the one guy that had been left alive at the end of it, he was actually still alive there, and we got to shake his hand. But it really does bring it home to you, the reality of these things, when you see real people carrying this out and acting out these battles that they actually had. Because over in Latvia, they honour the SS, because after the war they continued fighting, and it was because of the SS Legion there that so many of the Latvians were able to escape to safety, and the same with Estonia. And still today, the Russia makes a big fuss about it, and the EU makes a big fuss about it, about them honouring these war heroes of theirs. But even the politicians go out and honour them, because these are really brave people that gave their lives. Their families are still there, putting flowers in the wall where all their names are memorialised. So it must have been, it must be quite a surprise to find that they actually had a French reenactment playing the part of the Rexists. I should imagine they were portraying them in a negative light, were they, rather than a positive one?
That's what I was expecting when I started to watch the documentary, but it's actually surprisingly quite fair. So I don't know whether it was really mainstream, or whether this was some kind of, maybe it was financed by some people who were in the know more and are not as brainwashed, shall we say. I don't know. Maybe I will look some more into who made that video.
And you got a lot of
the footage problem. There will be some marked footage in the video. I simply could not find clean footage, that is footage without any watermarks, because a lot of people seem to finding these clips and then put their own name or the name of their YouTube channel on them, which is, to be honest, quite annoying if you want to use them for your own project. And so I was faced with the question of whether I should use them or use no footage or inferior footage. And in some cases, I decided to use the marked footage. It will be a bit disturbing. No, well, maybe not disturbing, but it will not look very clean, but I decided to use some of the marked footages because I just couldn't find clean ones.
Well, I'm sure it won't matter that much that you got some there with the watermarks on it. I actually got lots of early stuff there as well, newspapers and newspaper reports of him, and the politicians that he was exposing at the beginning, and some of the Rexist propaganda that they made up exposing the bankers. I'm guessing that must have come from a museum somewhere. It looked like a picture that somebody had taken. So I've seen again out in the Baltic countries, they have a museum of the Russian occupation and the German occupation, and in that museum there you can see the clothing and the propaganda that they had, and pictures, and it looked as if that picture of the Rexist propaganda that you had there had been taken from a museum, a similar museum like that somewhere. I guess we're just really lucky that people put this stuff online so that it can then be used. You know, I hope you don't get any problems with it, with copyright problems like the ones that Dennis has had. You know, I think if they put if they put film on YouTube, it should be there for people to be able to use. I mean, once it's been put on YouTube, they're saying basically YouTube owns that copyright. And since YouTube wants people to make their own videos and put them on there, surely they want people to use the videos that YouTube have already got on there. You know, this using copyright to silence and censor videos, it's a massive scam, and it really goes against the whole nature of creativity, I think, and being creative. You want to use what other people have done before, because it's like a tribute to them. You know, if you're using, say, some of this footage, the war footage that you've got in that Schmidt, that's a tribute to the people that filmed it, that were out there filming this footage in amongst the fighting and the guns and the explosions and the soldiers. They were in amongst that and they filmed it. And the fact that you want to use it now, 70 years later, is a fitting tribute to them. It shouldn't be owned by the company that put it out as propaganda, so that they can say, well, we want to silence your documentary on this. You know, I really don't like the way that they do that. And we were talking about this last week, I think it was, Dennis, the censorship. But you wanted to talk about something that we were talking about the week before, I think. Is that right, Dennis, about these black soldiers, the Congoid soldiers that were in the yep. Rhineland? You've discovered they were somewhere else now, I believe.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting enough, yeah. Obviously, we're trying to link the connection with the white genocide, what's going on today. So I looked a little bit more into it, and the Battle of Monte Cassino kind of came to the fore. This was a battle in an Italian abbey, which the Germans defended to the last. The Allies couldn't actually take it without just bringing in the Air Force and obliterating everybody and the abbey as well. So consequently, the three French forces in 1943 in Italy, they had some Moroccan mercenaries, and they fought, believe it or not, under contract terms. And in the contract was free license to rape and plunder in enemy territory. And many women in Italy were raped. I think figures around, well, government official figures around 60,000. And the Italian government later offered a bit of a pension, modest pension, to compensate the women of the trauma. But the night after the Battle of Monte Cassino, the German survivors withdrew. But then a division of Moroccan soldiers, 12,000 of them, left the camp and swarmed all over the mountain villages. They raped every village woman and girl they could get their hands on, an estimated 3,000, from 11 to 86. They murdered 800 village men who tried to protect the women, and a lot of the women also died from the abuse. According to an Italian eyewitness, the brutality by the Gumiers, the Moroccans, had the lowest moral values of anyone associated with the war in a European theatre. They raped women, they raped men, and when they got through with them, they raped animals. People of these mountain villages are descended, apparently, from the ancient Valaci of the tribes in pre-Roman Italy, and the women are reputed to be stunning. Tall, more graceful than other women in Italy, the Moroccan soldiers selected the prettiest girls for gang raping, and long lines of dark-skinned Moroccans waiting the turn for each one. And some were raped up to about 200 Moroccans. Just a vile attack. And the American general involved in all this, I can name him, he unleashed Moroccan troops. It was General Mark Clark of the American 5th. He wanted to remove Germans from the Battle of Monte Cassino and reach Rome before the Allied forces. The mass rape left many of the Italian women with venereal diseases, and in turn their husbands and lovers were in turn affected. It led to an epidemic in that area of Italy in the early 1950s. The International Red Cross wanted to help, but the Italian government refused any aid because it didn't want to strain relations, believe it or not, with France. Interestingly enough, there's no mention of this action in most of the histories of the Battle of Monte Cassino, which have been published since the war. Not even the official history published by the US Department mentions what these Moroccans actually did to the Italian mountain villagers.
These Moroccans, Dennis.
Some shame.
Dennis, these Moroccans, would they have been Muslim? I thought the Muslims were fighting on the side of the Germans. I thought these Muslims were our equals. I thought they were Hitler's friends.
I mean, to be honest, it weren't just Moroccans, neither. Tangiers, Tunisians, Algerians, Senegalese, you know, the whole bunch from the French colonies. And again, they've been used as a weapon. I mean, not only are they used to fight for the French, but then they're used to desecrate the race of the people they're fighting.
I think the Muslims that were fighting on the side of the Third Reich, I think they were the exceptions to the rule, weren't they?
I'm sure they were.
I think they were answerable to the Grand Mufti, who would have been different to who the Moroccans were answerable to. I think the Moroccans would have been answerable to Saudi Arabia and the...
if anybody,
the
to be honest.
...that they have there. Well, exactly.
When they negotiated an old contract.
So they actually had that written into the contract, that they could rape as many white women as they wanted.
The dawn of the attack, this was the proclamation announced to the soldiers. Soldiers, this time it is not only for the freedom of your lands I offer you if you win this battle. Behind the enemy there are women, houses, wine, among the best in the world. There is even gold. All this will be yours if you win. You have to kill the Germans to the last man at any cost. What I have said and the promise I have made, I will keep. And listen to this. For 50 hours, you will be absolute masters of what you find beyond the enemy. No one will punish you for what you do, and no one will ask to account for what you take.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of a very, very similar encouragement to the Red Army. You know, where we were saying, go, you noble Red Army soldiers. Was it saying similar there about raping the white women or taking the white women?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, they were fighting Europeans, and at that time, Europe was white, so there's no doubt about that. This was a general Juin, J-U-I-N, if I've spelled that right, and he was a mountain division of the French, apparently. But nothing ever, you know, they tried to take him to court, I think, during the 50s, but nothing ever came of it. These men just got away with it. This is another interesting bit for you. December 11th, 1943, they set foot, these are the Moroccans, by the way, they set foot on Italian soil, began the first reports of the rape. By the time the Allies had suffered every loss of the troops, the situation acquired such alarming proportions that de Gaulle, when visiting the Italian front in March 1944, stated that the Moroccans should be used to control the social order, that is to serve as the Carabinieri. The tragedy was that the police were also potential rapists. Any European woman was called a hajila, a whore by the Africans. It meant goat in the guard. In the garden. What happened next? Reports of 71, a German division in the situation in the town, recorded 6 rapes of women, and May 14th, the Allies won the final victory. A lot of sexual disease transmitted in the areas of Lazio and Tuscany. So, it's like I said, you know, this is a weapon, not only of, fighting, but the even more lasting rape of a culture and a race.
And lots of little black bastards being born 9 months later. No doubt.
I'm just going to pull you up on somebody here as well, because when I was going through that, the bastards in the Rhineland, there was accusations of the Germans, quote, treating the blacks like they treat the Jews and gassed them. Now, I've never seen any real reports of gassed black soldiers. And thinking about it, when it came to light that no gassings ever took place in Germany, if any, they say, was in the Soviet bloc, for that to be true of these gas German, American, or French colonial soldiers, they would have to be transported to the east to gas them. And even then, I haven't seen any black, I'm sure we would have seen them. So that's a complete lie, a complete fabrication. Gotta be.
No, I don't think they gassed any blacks at all. It seems I don't think they gassed
any Jews.
Any
Jews, to be honest.
Yeah.
They're accusing them of gassing these black soldiers, these colonial soldiers, when, you know, and American soldiers as well, you know, when they invaded.
They're accusing them of gassing American soldiers?
Yeah.
Where's their forensic reports of that then? What evidence do they have to show that?
Well, that annoys me because I've got to show my sources or I get Jewland all over me. Now, these documentaries, what the Allies produce, they make up the sources and then all the other documentaries source them. Or well, don't even bother.
They don't even make up sources. I don't think they come up with any sources. They just say 6 million Jews. Six million Jews were gassed. And if you say, well, what's the source for that? Well, that's the figure. That's the figure that was used. That's the official figure, and that's all there is to it. You haven't actually got any sources for that. If you go back, the source for the 6 million figure goes back before the First World War, doesn't it?
Well, the Auschwitz, like, you know, they dropped it by a couple, 3 million, but it's still 6 million. Yeah.
I think I think we all know they just use that basically to silence people that they want silenced.
It's a hotline, isn't it?
It's okay for the Jews to say, well, there was four, actually 2 million weren't gassed at Auschwitz, but if you get a historical revisionist saying that, then they're likely to get persecuted and chucked in the jail. Just this week we've had Joshua Bonehill again has been sentenced to 2 years for making jokes about the Jews. Basically, he put a cartoon picture of a mouse with Luciana Berger's head on it, and he's been given 2 years in prison for that. And don't forget, he's already serving 3 years or 3 years in prison for a picture of a happy merchant Jew at Auschwitz. So just for making jokes about the Jews, they will throw you in prison. Let alone questioning the dogma of the Holocaust, the 6 million. We've got Alison Shablo, is actually spelled Shablos. She's in court on the 15th of December for singing a song, a satirical song, about these Holocaust frauds, ones that have admitted that they're actually telling frauds, that they're actually telling lies. So she made a song up about all these admitted Holocausters that have been exposed as hoaxing the world, and yet she's now being taken to court for that. So you can't even point out these admitted holo-hoaxers without being accused of being a Holocaust denier. So even though they've been found to have been telling a complete pack of lies, if you point that out, then you're a Holocaust denier.
Yes, the Jews can point it out. Truth is no defence. That's the law they go by.
Well, I think they... I think that was a precedent that was set with in Ernst Sundel's trial, wasn't it? And they said in cases of hate speech, truth is no defence. It just means if you say something that a minority doesn't like, then you can be punished for this. And this is in our own countries. Now, if they wanted to do that in Israel, you know, if you say something that the Jews don't like in Israel, you could be punished. Fair enough. But what it should be over here in Britain, it should be if you say something that the British people don't like, you should be punished. So if we hear any of these minorities saying anything against us...
It shows that we're controlled by them, though. It's a giveaway. It's a giveaway.
It's an absolute giveaway. The way that they're trying to portray this in the press is to say that there was threats of violence, that this Luciana Berger felt fearful for her life. She thought she was going to be murdered. But all Josh Bonehill's tweets were was of head on a mouse. You know, they link it with death threats. Where's the death threats?
Yeah, well, they'll twist it any way they can because they can. I mean, David Irving suffered, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I would never contemplate going to court over the Holocaust in a Zionist controlled country. It just wouldn't happen.
Well, you know you're not going to get a fair trial if you do.
Exactly.
But you don't even get a fair trial in our own countries. This is the thing that gets me. It should be that if any foreigners come on our soil and insult us, they are the ones that should be punished. They should be deported. But instead, if we speak out against any of the crimes that the foreigners carry out or highlight them, we're the ones that get punished. It's like these newspapers, the Daily Mail and the Daily Express, that are being blackmailed by their advertisers not to report on the crimes of the immigrants. You know, that's like saying...
It's all over Europe now, don't we? You know, it's all been swept under the carpet. It only comes out if, you know, there's been a real serious breach. But I'm quite sure that the figures they release, the crimes that they tend not to mention, are multiple. I mean, I saw a video, put a video up on my own Facebook the other week of the violence of the... immigrants in France. I just could not believe it. They had a complete town to themselves. But you'll never see that on mainstream.
I did. After I laughed at myself a bit last night, I caught a little bit there on the news, and they were saying that Paris has got a rat infestation. It's swarming full of rats.
Two-legged rat.
Yeah, and they couldn't think why this was. So they said, well, there's all this rubbish, but it's all just suddenly appeared. Well, of course, there's all this rubbish. You've got all these Africans living there on the streets, which you're not showing us on the BBC.
In the middle of Paris,
it's full of these rats. Now, you cannot speak up for your own people anymore, or point out the damage that's being done to your own country. There's a guy in London, I think it is, who's got a shop, and it's called Really British, and what he sells in it is British things like Doctor Who paraphernalia, Union Jack flags,
pork.
Pork, bacon, full English breakfast, he's been attacked. He's had people going in there shouting racist at him. His staff have handed in their notice because they can't handle being attacked by all the members of the public, and he's had to remove the Union Jack flag out of fear. He's removed the flag of the country.
This is a wake-up call for people who study World War II and actually believe that France and Britain and the US won World War II, where in actual fact, evidence is proving that along with Germany and all the Axis-powered countries, what are now being targeted, but also France, Britain and the US, which must tell you there's a higher power. And these countries were only controlled to win World War II, but never to reap the benefits of winning World War II. And if that's not striking home now, nothing will.
Well, this is just it. If only those people could see what our countries look like today. When we were told, oh, if you don't fight against Hitler, we'll all be speaking German. And if they could see the road signs in London written in three or four different languages, They were to know that we are being told we have to pay for interpreters for these people when they break the law and they have to go into court. And if you just look at an NHS form, it gives you over a dozen different ethnicities to sign, to say which ethnicity you are. And that's just out of all the ones that are in this country now. I don't think the people that actually fought in World War II would recognise parts of Britain anymore. They'd think they were in New Delhi or in Saudi Arabia or somewhere.
Is it's not as though they weren't warned. John Emery got hung for going to help fight the communists, and one or two others as well. They were telling the people of Britain that this was a communist, we're siding with communism, and the destruction of the white race is now taking place, and which they predicted. So, what can you say? I mean, if I say to you, Sven, now, put your hand on your heart. Can you tell me that Britain is or England is English? Because I can't see it now.
Yeah, I, you know, it wasn't just John Amory, was it? There were other people that spoke out, and they locked them up.
They locked them up.
Oswald Mosley and his British Union of Fascists. They locked them all up, and you know they weren't the enemy. They said that they would fight for Britain. But they disagreed with the premise of the war, going to fight against Germany. It was the wrong enemy. So many people said that. So many people realized it afterwards. You know, General Patton realized it afterwards, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
I'm just reading...
Churchill always knew it.
Yeah, well, he wrote about the communists, and he wrote about the Jewish nature of Bolshevism, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he totally knew about it all and was for the plan to get rid of the white race, because he was obviously a friend of the Jews, if not a Jew himself.
He knew it was treason, what he was doing. George Lincoln Rockwell, I'm reading his book at the moment, and he was talking about how he was fighting against, you know, he fought against Germany. He thought he was fighting the good fight. And then he realized, well, hang on a minute. We've given all of Europe to these communists. And then he noticed afterwards that they would say that some particular tin pot dictator somewhere was fighting against the communists. And what they would do is they would arm this tin pot dictator, and then the tin pot dictator would turn out to be Chairman Mao, or he'd turn out to be Fidel Castro, or the guy in Vietnam. And every time he said it was a nationalist that these dictators were fighting against. And instead of arming the nationalists, the Americans would arm this other guy and say that he's fighting against the communists. And then 6 months after the revolution had occurred, and
you find out they were communists who won the war.
They would side with Russia, and then it'd be, oh no, there's another one. He's turned into a communist. How did that happen? And of course, all this time, there have been people warning about it and saying, look, you know, that guy is he's a Soviet. He's a Bolshevik. And every time they would ignore it. So, you know, we think things are different today. We're standing up and saying, look, you know, this is a Muslim invasion. The Muslims are blowing themselves up. They're committing all these crimes. They're replacing all the white people. And the media ignores it. And then when you get a Muslim atrocity, they fake all this shock and horror. And how could we have possibly known that the Muslim was going to behead one of our soldiers? And all that sort of thing. And yet nationalists have been telling them for years that... That's what these Muslims are going to do. And all you have to do is look at them, a Muslim country, to see how violent they are. This has been going on for the last 70 years at least.
Well, the thing is, right, is a lot of these Muslims are taking advantage because, let's be honest, it's the Jews behind it all. And the Jews are using the Muslims to break down the culture of white Christian Europe. So consequently, these Muslims are going in there and they're taking full advantage. I mean, some may be against it, but there's a hell of a lot of we're going in there and just grabbing, thinking that, you know, we're going to have this Sharia law and they're going to rule the world. But the time will come when the Jews will have enough of them. Because a goyim is a goyim is a goyim. Whether you're black, white, pink or blue, you're a goyim, a cattle to the Jew. So these people who think they're on a wonderful time at the moment, there's, you know, and that goes for the LGBT society. Their time will come. Believe me. They will wish the white race was still around. You know, it's going to work, but they can't see it. They're doing the biddings of the Jews. And, you know, they'll remember the words of Dennis. I'll tell you for sure.
Well, I think you can see from this coalition, from the left coalition with Muslims, feminists, blacks, Arabs, they're all sort of supposed to be aligned on the left, but they're all against one another. So the fact that they are actually all against one another and their desires conflict with each other, I mean, that shows you that there has to be someone behind it that's directing it, that is benefiting from it. It has to be.
And they'll turn on each other, because if ever that day comes when Europe is finally under Muslim control, you know, all these gay people marching in the street with their fancy shorts and their, you know, and the gay flags, they're going to get thrown off rooftops.
Yeah, they'll be taking a one-way ticket from the top of the block of flats.
Exactly.
We know that. And we get accused of being anti-homosexual, but we're not saying we're going to throw them off the roof of a block of flats. We're just saying that they shouldn't be allowed to... It shouldn't be publicly acceptable. It shouldn't be an acceptable behaviour. You know, children shouldn't see it.
It's normal, that's for sure.
Yeah, you should be treated as a mental illness, which is what it is. It's like any other form of self-harm. The figures for the amount of children that are self-harming have been released. They're shocking. They've gone through the roof. That's been in the news this week as well. And I think a large part of that is because of what they're being told is normal. They're being told homosexuality is normal. They're being told that being replaced by Negroes and Pakistanis is normal. They're being told that they will get an extra punishment if one of these minorities says that they called them nigger. You know, this must be terrible for young people today. But there is a spark of light there. There is a sunbeam which is shining through the dark days that we live in, which I read about today, which is in Italy. All the school children have voted Mein Kampf as one of the best books ever, to the shock and surprise of the establishment.
He just won't go away, will he?
I think that's brilliant. Seriously, top 10. I think there's 150 schools, all the schools right the way across the country, and they all voted for Mein Kampf. Now, I don't know whether this was just a vote to say we're sick of the establishment, so we're going to vote for the worst book that the establishment hates the most, or whether they genuinely are yearning for a nationalist revival. I think maybe.
Well, I think they are, but to be fair, I mean, Austria lost their election, but Italy, that's gone the way of the right wing, I believe. So there's a movement, a feeling across the world, especially with the internet, you know, so much has been released now about agendas that people are starting to see the picture. And, you know, you're going to have this backlash. Well, the problem is that, you know, they do hold the ace card, and that is that, you know, they won two world wars, so we'll see.
Well, they might have won two world wars, but we've got an American president who is sympathetic to civic nationalism, who identifies as a civic nationalist. That's better than identifying as a globalist. I think we have got cause for optimism. And with that Austrian vote, obviously Hofer has lost the vote, but he did cuck out. He started moderating his message and trying to disassociate himself from being far right. So he lost the presidential election, but there's another election coming up in 6 months, which is the party election. And if the party gets voted in, then that's the one who's got all the power. The Austrian president, I think he has power over the armed forces, but apart from that, he's pretty much only a figurehead. It would have just been, you know, well, we've got a far-right president there. You know, he would have been important within the country itself, but not internationally. But if the Austrian Freedom Party, if they actually win the election, which the polls are saying that they have a good chance of winning it, if they win the election, then things will turn out all right after all. You know, the Liberals got their president in, who can't really do anything, but the actual Patriots will have got in a decent party. And also Geert Wilders in Holland. At the moment, he's got the majority of people are saying they're going to vote for his party. And he will have an outright majority. Because up until now, there's been problems with coalitions, and it's all been coalition governments in Holland. But he will have an outright majority if the vote was taken now. And their election is only in 6 months. So I really do think...
That's also interesting this week. It's only kind of a wry smile came to my face. In Poland, apparently, the ruling government there at the moment sacked... The boot was under the foot for change. Sacked, I think it was a woman who was dealing with the culture side of things because she was too influenced by the Jews.
Well, that is a turn up. Did they explicitly say that? Did they explicitly say that because she was?
Oh, yeah, I'll find you the link. I'll send it to you.
Too influenced by the Jews, the Jewish lobby groups. Because I mean, they're too frightened to even say that, even though it's obvious.
Like Poland,
British friends of Israel, Labour friends of Israel. In America, you've got huge, great lobby groups for Israel and the Jews, and you can say. We don't want to have foreign influence in our government, but to explicitly say that it's for Jewish influence, that seems to be the one that really gets you into trouble, is actually identifying it as a Jewish influence. That's what's got Joshua Bonehill locked up, is explicitly saying it's Jews.
Yeah, because they don't want people to know, do they? Well,
you can't miss it, can you? When you've got people being locked up for putting a politician's head on a mouse.
Yeah, an 86-year-old woman who denies the Holocaust and demands some proof of it.
This is Ursula Haverback. Have you had any news on her recently, Dennis?
No, just the fact that I believe she's trying to take it all the way to the highest court in Germany. Whether or not that'll prove successful, even if it gets that high. But certainly people are hoping that some of the stringent rules at the lower courts may not be as active. We'll wait and see, but it's a hell of a brave lady.
Very brave. You think of her age. You think of a lot of these revisionists. You know, they're in their 60s, they're in their 70s, they're getting put in prison. Horst Mahler, he lost his leg. He was out for a few months, and then they were wanting to put him back in prison again. And we think that we've got free speech. You know, people talk about free speech, and yet we've got people that have been locked up just for the smallest things. You know, Charlie Hebdo, we're supposed to celebrate with the jokes in Charlie Hebdo, but if you make a joke about the Jews, that's it.
Hmm. Voltaire, isn't it?
Yeah, we've even got there's a solicitor as well. There's a solicitor this week called Ian Mallard, and he's been tweeting. He sent out a few tweets that were critical of the Jews, and what they've done, they've barred him from his profession. I think he was a barrister or a solicitor, and they've actually barred him from his profession just because they don't like his politics.
Yeah,
they don't like his opinion.
You know, he'll carry that for quite some time. Because they are relentless, as we know.
Well, I think, you know, the way that they're doing this, people are going to wake up to it. If you look at the comment sections now, I am really cheered up by the comment sections. I was looking at the Daily Express today, and in the comment section, they were talking about the 6 million figure and how the Holocaust hoax didn't happen. And this was on... I think this was on the report on the Really British shop. And you know, they're just openly talking about it in the comments, which means that it has filtered down to the public. Because before it was just people that checked the blogs out. You know, before that, it was just people that had actually been to a right-wing bookshop. But now it's making its way to the public.
On YouTube, read the comments of any of the Holocaust documentaries, what I've been up there for some time. The amount of comments that actually go against the grain is truly a sight to behold. It really is.
Well, YouTube have been having their purges, haven't they? And Twitter and Reddit and all these companies have been getting rid of right-wing members for posting right-wing commentary. Mm. And even the left have been complaining about this. They've been saying, you know, well, hang on a minute. We may not like their views, but surely they've got a right to express them. And I think, you know, that's causing them to question, you know, their actual commitment to this and who it is that's behind these companies.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Because they obviously don't believe it.
It will turn. My words.
They don't believe it themselves, do they? These people that run the companies, the Jews that run these companies, they don't believe in all this equality and diversity and free speech.
Their one goal in life is to get rid of the white race. That's it. And then after that, whatever they choose. But their ultimate goal is to get rid of Christianity and white European culture in whatever country. That's all they think about. I'll come to that. A couple of months ago, that's all, and they all instinctively know it. You know, they've got this thing about it that every Jew just knows the situation. You know, I don't suppose they're taught in schools, they just know, maybe it's come through down the family. But it's quite amazing.
Well, they know their whole religion is based upon being anti-Christian, and when they're brought up since as a child, they're taught that they were all pogromed and how horrible the Christians have been to them. Doesn't enter their heads that actually the Christians have been incredibly generous to them to allow them to live in their countries, allow them to be on an equal footing, even allowed them to get into government. They just don't think like that. They just think, they're horrible goyim. he has what we have.
Exactly. We're too kind, we're too open, you know what I mean? Hitler said it many times, that the Jew wakes up every day and he thinks of ways of stripping you of the assets. And the European just does not think like that. You know, he's far more, you know, sociable and accommodating.
I'm still getting lots of crackling there, Dennis. And popping noises. I don't know if what that is. But,
I think it's my shoulder rubbing.
I don't move. We get your microphone. Excuse me again. We get your microphone sounding absolutely perfect, and then 2 weeks later...
I can't keep my head still.
Yeah, it's all back to popping and crackling noises again.
Yeah. I apologise profusely. It could be that I didn't sleep for 3 nights.
I think you've earned a bit of a celebration there anyway, haven't you? And it is Christmas.
Tell me about it. Early Christmas celebrations. And I mean Christmas, spelt Christmas. Not Xmas.
With proper celebrations as well, unlike over there in Sweden.
At Tesco's.
Where they're preventing all the Christmas celebrations. I tell you what, something I noticed the other day, I got some Christmas stamps, and I thought, well, let's have a look and see what the scene is on the Christmas stamps this year. We've got a nice nativity scene, or we've got Jesus and Mary. No, we've got a Red Robin. A Red Robin. Okay, Red Robin, you know, it's British. Yep. They've said that Red Robin is going to be the bird of Britain. But what's Christmassy about a Red Robin?
It's certainly not more Christmas than Nativity, is it? I wouldn't have thought.
Well, it's this winter thing, isn't it? It's them saying, oh, well, we'll just have winter festival, season celebrations. Yeah, we'll just celebrate the fact it's winter.
Yeah.
We just put a robin on it.
Talking, not moving your neck, you know. Feel a bit like, what's he called in that chair?
Oh.
The scientist.
Davros.
Could be, yeah.
I can't remember.
Superman.
I can't remember his name. They do like him in Star Trek, though, don't they? They think he's a genius at the level of their other genius, Einstein.
Well, that was full of Jews as well, Star Trek. It later came to pass.
Well, I think Star Trek has been a promotion of Jewish ideals for
globalism,
decades, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I used to like that, believe it or not. I used to like it when I was a kid, but...
Race mixing.
Like
constant
Spock
promotion
and his
of
Jew
race mixing.
Sign when he parts his fingers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that, yeah, it's a rabbi's sign, isn't it, when they do that?
Yeah.
They had the first interracial kiss was on Star Trek.
There's a surprise.
In the 60s. And this half black, half Vulcan Tuvok character.
Pointy. Yeah,
and you hear Vulcan. Of the magic Negro that they like to put in all their television programmes, the one that can read and write. That was taking it one step further, wasn't it? Vulcan Negro.
I think we should have a competition. I think people listening to this programme should watch now over Christmas the number of times that mixed families appear on television.
Constantly. The one that really gets me is when they show the children. When they want to show children doing something, it will always be a black kid with a white kid. I saw something the other day.
I like
talking
to
about
teach the world to sing. Well, I caught they, one.
They were talking about children and romance and girls having boyfriends or kissing and silly little child romances. And it was black kids with white kids. Black kids with white girls. This is under the age of 10 that they were promoting. Isn't this cute? Sickening.
Just.
I think you'd be hard pushed to find a programme without it rather than looking to see how many times you see it. I think what you should really look out for is programmes that don't actually have any of that in them.
All right, I mean.
Well,
that's a rarity today, isn't it?
You won't see a programme that's all white anymore.
Which brings me back to that question when I said, is Britain really British now? It's multicultural, they've destroyed it.
I think you'd have to go to the remote parts of Wales and Scotland. Maybe you could go to a remote part of England and still find it to be British. But that's the only places you can
go
now.
You've been squeezed.
the cities are just cesspits.
Mm.
They're like Babylon was years ago.
Hell, victory for World War II, eh?
Victory for the Jews. It certainly wasn't victory for us, was it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Victory for the enemy.
People can't see it now. They never will do. That's for sure.
Well, people are seeing it now, aren't they?
See, well, they are, yeah, but some don't. And obviously some of the left know what's going on and pretend that we're just talking conspiracy. They know.
I think we're going to see more of the left actually coming to our side, because they aren't all idiots. Once they start looking into things, I mean, there's more information available now than there ever was before. And they must be questioning. Like I was saying, with this free speech issue with Joshua Bonehill and these others, if the left really does believe in free speech and they see things like that happening, they've got to question, you know, whether the ideology that they're following is actually genuine or whether it serves another purpose. When they see Twitter getting rid of all the accounts that have a different opinion to them, when they see Reddit doing the same, YouTube doing the same, when they hear about someone being jailed for a picture of an MP's face photoshopped onto a mouse, because that's all it is. Luciana Berger is just an MP. She's just a member of parliament. You know, the difference is that she's Jewish. Any other member of parliament would be laughed, you know, out of government for suggesting that someone be locked up for photoshopping their face onto a rodent. Surely the left must see that and think, well, hang on a minute. This requires further investigation. And I think we will see more of that. We have to. You know, I can't believe that, all the white people involved in the left are completely, totally degenerate. I believe a lot of them are in there because they think they're doing the right thing. They think they see the problems around them and they think that is the solution to it. But the more they clamp down on our speech, the more they're going to realize that they're actually serving something completely different to what they originally thought, I think.
I totally agree. I mean, I'll get comments, emails from people like that who said they were taken aback by the documentaries, and that this realised that there was an agenda on this left wing, which wasn't in their own interests, and they look at nationalism now as a totally different line.
Well, I know I wasn't always a nationalist, and it's information like yours, documentary like yours, that brought me to nationalism, and the majority of our listeners as well, Dennis. So you better actually let them know where they can find your work, because we're just coming up to the end of the podcast now.
Okay, well, as usual, the great story never told.tv for Adolf, Communism by the Back Door, which is due to go for pre-sales now. I don't think it'll be out for Christmas, but I think you'll be able to order it. You know, so you'll arrive just after. That's communismbythebackdoor.tv, my YouTube channel, Dennis Wise, and also the Facebook page, where every week I'm collecting so many friends, I can't speak.
More friends than you ever knew you had. More friends you ever knew you had. Okay, well, thank you very much, Dennis, for coming on again. Okay. Thank you very much, Messerschmitt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And we'll be back next week at same time, same place, with more Truth Without Radio for you. We hope you have a wonderful weekend and tune in again next Friday. Tuned in to